So anyway, it's kind of been, we talked about the genetic stuff at the last forum, and it's been published that people are most closely related to the chimpanzee genetically, because the chimpanzee has 98.7% of its DNA in common with the human being. And that makes it sound like there's just this very tiny percent difference between the human being and the chimpanzee. But it turns out that all the DNA in the body, the whole of an organism, the whole thing's called the genome, which means all the genetic information and all the DNA, that 28% of it is what type of DNA? You said there was 28%? 28% is coding?
Well, the introns and the exons.
Yeah, 28% of DNA is introns and exons.
Which either determine coding, 2% does coding, and the other
26
does like hair color and height and stuff.
So we have 28% of our DNA of gene, the genome is or DNA. 28% of DNA is the genes, and then the genes are broken into. So all the DNA isn't genes. Apparently, the genes are just clustered. And out of all the 100% of the DNA, 28% of that's genes. They don't know what the other DNA does. And then between that 28% is broken into two divisions. 2% is coding, which produces proteins. So our hair will grow and our skin and our teeth is all made out of proteins. And 26% tells us what our hair color will be, our eye color, our sex, how tall we'll be, and stuff like this. So out of the 100%, and the 28% and the 26%, they're not talking about any of that. They're only talking about the 2%, which is the introns, which is the coding DNA that produces protein. And of that 2%, we have 97.8% in common with the chimpanzee. So every time you turn on the media or the television and they say we have 98.7% in common, what they're really saying is that we don't even have 2% in common with them. If we had 100% of the 2% in common, then we'd have 2% in common with them. And then they'd be on there saying, we have 100% in common with the chimpanzee. And everybody'd be scratching their heads like this. What do you mean? So it's all this big fib where we don't even have 2%. We only have 98.7% of 2%. Which is what, you know? 1.98%? So anyway, that's the update on the genetics. Is there feedback on that? Colin, Suey, did you have feedback on the genetics?
Colin's there?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's a scientist.
Yeah, hi, Colin.
I think she turned the speaker off.
Somebody just posted something. I just posted sound.
What does Colin Suey say?
I was laughing.
Oh. Hey, Colin Suey, how did you fix your logon issue? Are you at home or are you somewhere else?
Still in the van.
Is he? What does he say?
I don't know. I'm at school.
You went back to school to get their Wi-Fi? All right. It's late there, too. He sits in school at Saturday night.
Midnight.
Are you in the science lab or the teacher lounge?
He just loves his job.
Keeping warm with a Bunsen burner.
Let's see. I'm at school like I was last week. After a brief stint in the van, I'm in my chemistry room.
Okay. Colin Suey's in his chem room at his school, Nefertiti.
Oh, good. That's a good spot.
Okay, well, let's move on to the last presentation. Then we're going to wrap the forum up. So this presentation's happening on Nauru's of 2010 is a really great gift for all of us. And it's something that I'd wondered about for a long time. And now, finally, we have the key information that we need in this aspect. And one of the things that Colin brought over tonight is a friend of his mother had passed on, and he used to work with his friend, and he used to tell him about the faith. And why don't you tell him?
Well, anyways, we talk about a lot of interesting concepts and stuff, but he was never all that interested. But when his mom died, she was from Chicago. So he flew back there to clean out her stuff, and in the will, he got left all of her books. and he called me from there and he said, "Hey, are you interested in Man? Do you know who Manly P. Hall is?" And I said, "Sure." You know, I had one of his books about, you know, Freemasonry and a lot of occult topics and stuff like that. And he's like, "Well, listen, my mom's got, you know, almost his entire library. You want them?" And so then I said, "Sure." And so he had them mailed back to me, and it's this huge library of like really interesting titles, like really like occult type stuff, Freemasonry and Rosicrucians and Kabbalah, and you know, kind of like the forerunner of all the New Age stuff that's popular now.
You know, of all the people involved in the spiritual movements at the turn of the century, Abdu'l-Bahá had met with some of them, like Annie Besant of the Theosophical Society. And Manly P. Hall actually mentions Abdu'l-Bahá in one of his books. Oh, I'd come across that. He said that there was this all-knowing type of teacher whose name was Abbas Effendi, who had, like Tolstoy wrote about Baha'u'llah. He said, what did he say about the key? Somebody has the key to the unlocking the mysteries of the whole universe, and he lives in Akka, and his name is Baha'u'llah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Manly P. Hall wrote something about Abdu'l-Bahá like that, and he says, his name is Abbas Effendi, and he's known by the magical name Abdu'l-Bahá.
Who is this?
Yeah. And what?
Where was this?
I've read it in one of Manly P. Hall's things online. Hmm. And he's actually quoting Shoghi Effendi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he was aware of the Baha'i faith too. But of all these different ones, in these different groups, like the Theosophical Society and stuff, Manly P. Hall has more of an intellectual approach and a historical approach to that subject. So he's easier to read. And probably the best book to read of his, if you're going to read one of his books to start with, is The Secret Teachings of All Ages. Like if you were going to get into it. Okay, anyway, Doc also happens to quote Manly P. Hall on the meaning of the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill in the book that he wrote, The Beast. He cites Manly P. Hall. That's the first time I heard of Manly P. Hall. So when this issue of Manly P. Hall came up, it was kind of another one of those coincidences, you know, what's God up to. So anyway, Colin brought the books by. We were looking at them tonight. There's got to be, this guy must have written about 60 to 100 books and pamphlets. Colin's got about 70 of them. And we spread them all out. We're looking at them all, and it's really kind of a hodgepodge of Eastern mysticism and occult subjects and spiritualism. And even when you read The Secret Teachings of All Ages, that was what Manly P. Hall was trying to do, was bring some semblance of order to a giant hodgepodge of unorganized information.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's happening with the mapping of the human genome. Like, they've discovered that there's four bases called G, A, T, and C, and that these relate to each other in two base pairs. The two of them pair up with each other and another two of them pair up. But individually, there's four of them. And last week, we were talking about how these base pairs, or these four bases, are similar to the four letters of the Most Great Name. And how in the Baha'i Revelation, it talks about how God had a plan for creating the universe and everything in it. And, of course, his purpose was to be known and loved. But the plan itself is an expression of his will to bring about all of this reality so that a being could exist, which is man, to know and love the existence of God. And God's a hidden mystery that's an infinite invisible essence, or the operating reality behind the scenes even, that's the creator of this. And that's the real secret teaching of all ages. Mm-hmm. Is how does the individual, through some sort of experience, come into the presence of God and experience a direct relationship with God and have a strong, clear, mystical feeling between themselves and God. And this is why God himself sent the manifestations in the Adamic cycle. And they gave laws, ordinances, and teachings for an ever-advancing civilization in the world that we have today. Baha'u'llah says, for the sole purpose of preparing us to come before the supernal throne face to face in the next world. So whereas some people are morbid or dark about death and this type of thing, the teachings of these manifestations are different, that the other world's a world of light, and this earthly plane is a world of morbidity and darkness and so forth. And of course we see this. When we see death occur, we had a chicken die the other day, and it was suffering, and I poured some water on it, then it started to relax. And then the next morning I went out there and it was stiff as a board. I couldn't believe it. And its feet, which are normally like this, were flat and like pushed up inside it. And I picked it up and it was like, rawr. And so I buried it out in the backyard, you know. But I mean, the life was just gone out of that thing, and it had rigor mortis, and I wouldn't want to even eat it. I was like, when I looked at it, I was like, poke, poke. I mean, I want to eat this. When I saw it was dying, I thought about cutting off its head and then eating it. Well, when you kill a cow, it gets rigor mortis too. So you can't just kill a cow and eat the cow right then. I guess. Yeah, you got to hang it up and wait 36 hours for a human being has rigor mortis for 3 days. I don't know how long a cow has rigor mortis. But you got to hang it up there until the rigor mortis passes over on the beef and the meats that you eat, you know. But like the only type of meat I've actually killed and eaten is fish. And you just cut their heads off and fry them up. So I don't know if they get rigor mortis, do they? They just sort of dry out.
They do.
They do get rigor mortis?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so when do you have to eat them before they get rigor mortis, right? No. You usually eat fresh fish, right?
Like I'd go fishing, and it'd be a while before I could get them back home and everything like that. Get them back home, they'd just be all like
stiff.
Stiff
as a carp.
Yeah,
stiff as a carp.
Yeah.
Then how long for them to relax? Or you just cook them up when they're stiff?
They didn't last that long.
Would you just cook them up while they're stiff?
Yeah, sure.
So you ate them while they were in rigor mortis?
Yeah.
Hmm. Delightful. No, just. We just don't think of our food like this, you know.
Yeah. I don't know if they go back to being. I know in a human body it does.
Yeah, relax.
After 36 hours, it goes back to being pliable.
Yeah.
Again. I'm trying to think of the answer.
And that's weird because that's the same amount of time it takes for the soul to finally stop lingering around the body. Uh-huh. So like after the soul leaves the body, rigor mortis sets in, uh-huh. and it lingers around the body for about 72 hours, mm-hmm. then it leaves, and then that's when rigor mortis goes away. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not just, maybe the physical side of it's the ATP thing, but maybe the spiritual condition of the human beings, rigor mortis is the soul hanging around the body for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be, maybe there's something, if the soul was hanging around the body and the body was all loose and limp, the soul would be distraught. So the body's kind of like this, you know, like a
stiff.
Like a private when the general walks on board the ship,
yeah.
or
yeah.
whatever the private's.
Yeah,
is it attention? Then he has to say at ease. Uh-huh. So maybe the body's at attention to its master, which is the soul, for the 72 hours. Then the soul's like at ease. Then it relaxes. You think mm-hmm. that's what happens?
It's like you say 72
half
hours.
Joking.
All that is just three revolutions of the earth.
Yeah. Okay, so Abdul has a tablet on graveyards. He says they should be very beautiful, and they should be like parks. Mm-hmm. And this idea of the dark graveyard with the tombstones crooked over and mm-hmm. spooky. Uh-huh. You know, anyway, so a lot of, in our society today, because it's so materialistic, if we look at the material side of death, it starts to get morbid, or they make it spooky. All of the ideas of psychical powers or of spiritual phenomenon are all supernatural horror and terror. Mm-hmm. They're usually presented in this venue.
Yeah.
And the manifestations came to remove this perspective from this. But anyway, when we look at these books from Manly P. Hall, for instance, or just these subjects in general, it's kind of like a big hodgepodge of mysticism. It doesn't make any sense. Okay. So when we think of the Bible, like if we want to quote the book of Isaiah or something like this, like if I mention the book of Isaiah, immediately everybody knows what I'm talking about. You kind of know where it's located in the Bible that you've held in your hands. Mm-hmm. If I mention chapter 9, verse 6 and 7, we know that's in the proofs. Mm-hmm. If we mention the New Testament, well, that comes afterwards, the book of Revelation, the four Gospels. Okay. So if I mention the Gospel of John and said John wrote this, see, and we just started talking about the Gospel itself, well, you could have a separate publication, which is just the little Gospel of John. I had one mailed to me by a Christian ministry once. You know, you can order them, anybody can get them. But we also know that it's in the New Testament and where it's located. Mm-hmm. But if we mention the Kitab Yad, Baha'u'llah's covenant, we know that that exists. But where is it located in relationship to everything else Baha'u'llah wrote? Okay, he also wrote the book of Certitude.
Right.
And then the Akdas, Shoghi Effendi, tells us we don't even have it. He says it's scattered over 26 volumes of Baha'u'llah's writings, and it has to be compiled together into the proper form and then codified. He says the Persians don't have the Akdas. So this is something that's been on my mind for a long time, is, well, why don't we just have a Baha'i Bible or a classification system or something, you know, that makes sense, so we could all understand the revelation of Baha'u'llah from like an encyclopedic way. And that's what this presentation is about, you know. So in Baha'u'llah's revelation, one of the other explanations for the revelation, or titles of it, he calls it the revelation of the most great name. And so in a lot of Baha'u'llah's tablets, he starts getting into how each letter in these different words that were used in the revelation represent certain things. So for instance, on the ringstone symbol, it's formed of the letters B and H, where there's those little circles that look like rosebuds. Those are the letter H. And then the lines that connect themselves like a cross is the letter B. So it's actually made from four letter H's and two letter B's to form the ringstone symbol. And on either side...
Persian, right?
What?
It's Persian.
Yeah, Persian and Arabic.
Right.
It's the same letters.
B in Arabic is like...
Yeah, let me draw it. So this is the B with a dot under it. The letter H, you know, looks like that, you know. Mm. So what he does is he takes two letter H's and connects them. Like if we write AA in cursive, that's not actually a letter. That's the line that connects the two A's.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How do you erase this thing?
Is there like a little towel in there?
No, not there. Can you give me a rag?
There is a towel in there.
Easy erase mitt.
Oh, it's a mitt. It's in Josiah's bed. It's blue.
His bed?
Yeah, they were using it as a bag. And I thought it was his bag, and I tossed it up in his bed. I didn't know what it was. And this is again what I'm saying. You find something, you don't know what it is, and you throw it away. So here we've got all these different little scraps of writing from Baha'u'llah, and it's like, what's this? You know?
Mm.
And the other thing is that things take on meaning and context. All right, so this presentation isn't going to be too long. So that's one letter B, and then here's the other letter B, and then there's two letter H's here, and two letter H's here. And that's how they make the ringstone symbol.
Hmm.
So Abdu'l-Bahá explains the reason, he starts to explain the meaning of this, and he has a tablet where he starts to get into the details about all these letters.
Yeah.
And what they mean. And one of the things he says it means is, as there's two H's above and two H's below, it symbolizes the principle as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things in the symbol. And then he's got two five-pointed stars on each side,
mm-hmm.
and he points out that the name Bab, B-A-B, the letter B has a numerical value of 2, or a spiritual value of 2, and the letter A has a numerical value of 1, or a spiritual value of 1, so Bab's total is 5. Baha adds up to 9. And then he says 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 equals 15. And 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 7, 8, 9 equals 45. And 45 is the number of Adam. ADM adds up to 45. A is 1, D is 4, and M is 40. And then he says Bab is 15, and that's Eve. So then he relates the Bab and Baha'u'llah being those two five-pointed stars to Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm.
See? So what we see here is that in a person, the female, if the New Jerusalem descends like a bride adorned for a husband, she's got two ovaries. And then the man has his seed in also two round objects. And then when the male meets with the female and this point of conception takes place, this is where the soul comes into contact with the human body. And so this form symbolizes how spirituality enters into the material world also in this type of a way. And I had a biological picture that when I was in California studying this, I was a substitute teaching a biology science class, and I opened the biology book, and they had a picture of the male and the female organs, like in that exhibit you were talking about, where the guy stripped all the skin off everybody.
Yeah.
They had the uterus and the ovaries, and then they had the male thing, and then they had the... You know, show them uniting together, but it was biologically stripped, so you could see the internal capacity of it, and that's when I saw the ovaries. Obviously, you know, Mm-hmm. You can see the other part. So then I was just like, well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So the other thing it looks like is that these four things, also we have two arms and two legs. So our legs are on the bottom, and our arms are on the top, and these are four supports that support our intellect, where we think in the abstract. So this pattern of the most great name, this is the ringstone symbol, shows a pattern in creation of the universe. It shows a pattern in the five-pointed star form that our human body's in. It shows a pattern in how the soul connects with the body. So it's not just something fictitious or irrelevant or separate from reality. That when we look at it this way, we can see, using the biological example, that there's some sort of information encoded in the revelation of Baha'u'llah that pertains to understanding deeper the relationship between God and man. So in order to speak on any subject, we have to use a language, and a language is a symbolic system. Like Doc explained, it started with little wedge-shaped drawings, mm-hmm. and then that later became our alphabet. And then the alphabets had numerical meanings and so forth. So in one of Baha'u'llah's tablets is called the Surah of the Temple. And the word in Persian or Arabic for that is Haykal, Hykal. And a Haykal is a five-pointed star. And it also means, it could be translated as body or temple or house, mm-hmm. this word Haykal. And the Surah of the Temple, Baha'u'llah had written in Adrianople, in the land of mystery, and he later rewrote it in Akka, and he had the five epistles to the world leaders attached to it. Mm-hmm. The tablet to the Pope, the tablet to Queen Victoria, the tablet to the King of France, and then the King of Russia, the Tsar. Mm-hmm. And instead of writing the United States, he addressed the Shah of Persia. So, and he had it done in a five-pointed star where the Sur of the Temple itself was put in the middle of the star. And then in the other five triangles, on the top was the Pope, and then the other four beast countries, if you substitute the United States and Iran being similar, mm-hmm. we'll explain that in a minute, that would be the arms and legs mm-hmm. of this temple. And in that, he talks about the four letters of the name, the word temple is spelled with four letters also, Hykal. And he starts to mystically, very in like a cipher-type language, talk about how the four letters of temple become the four letters of the most great name, Abha, A-B-H-Y. And two of them are the same. H and Y are in Haykal. Haykal is H-Y-K-L, and Abha is A-B-H-Y. So then you're left with the A and the B being related to the K and the L numerically, the way he switched Baha into Adam by getting 45. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Baha'u'llah calls this alchemy in his tablets. What he's saying is that if you look at the way something looks outwardly, that's the way the shape of the letter appears. And the form and substance of the letter is the object. And that inside that's the essence of the thing, which would be the number or the spiritual reality of it. And so what he's saying is that if you take the outward appearance of something, let's say it's the letter A, and so inwardly it's the number 1, you know, so Bob is 5 total. And then he expands that into 15 and shows how 15 is the value of Eve, therefore Bob and Eve are related, or therefore Baha and Adam are related. So they do this transformation by taking the letters and making it numerical and then performing numerical operations like algebra and stuff like this. And then once they get the final form algebraically, then they put it back into letters. For instance, there were a lot of believers named Muhammad, because apparently over there everybody's named Muhammad. Mm-hmm. But not before Muhammad came. But after Muhammad came, everybody's named Muhammad over there, a lot of them. Even Yusuf's name, his name's actually Muhammad.
Is it?
It's Muhammad Yusuf.
Yeah. Muhammad Yusuf.
Yeah. So Yusuf is an individual name. Muhammad's more of a generic name.
Well, Yusuf.
Muhammad has the same, if you add up all the letters and numbers, you get the same value as the word Nabil. So there were a couple of believers named Muhammad at the time of Baha'u'llah, and he renamed them Nabil. When they became, so what he said is that they were outwardly Muhammad, in essence they were this number, and then when they accepted him, they were transformed into a new person named Nabil. Mm. So they had like a new spiritual outward name, but the essence hadn't changed. It was just a new appearance of the... You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's different levels of meaning of all of this. I know it sounds a little esoteric, but this is the key that unlocks all of the writings of Baha'u'llah. So because it's the revelation of the Most Great Name, this is the key to it. The entire concept of philosophy, mysticism, esotericism is... Juan Cole, when I talked to him about this, he called this an impenetrable esotericism. He didn't understand what I was saying. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I couldn't even get one... He just didn't understand any of it. So, for instance, Baha being 5 and Baha'u'llah is 9, Abdul Baha says 5 times 9 is 45. Mm-hmm. So then he shows how the Bab and Baha'u'llah become Adam. Well, in the Seven Valleys, which is, Shoghi Effendi says, is the greatest of all the mystical works of Baha'u'llah, he says, "Praise be to God that has created man out of nothingness." You know, and then he goes on from there. But in Persian and Arabic, the word he used for nothingness isn't the word nothingness, it's the word Adam. They translate this into English as nothingness, but it means more than this. So the idea of some of these mystics is that there's a perfect being, which is the pre-existent Adam, or Adam Kadmon. Mm-hmm. This is the perfect man, and that this is how creation came into being. And in one of the Bab's writings, he says there can be no connection. Bob says, because there can be no connection between the creator and the creation, therefore God created the primal will as the first emanation from God in such a way that it created itself. So in other words, the first thing that emanated from God, which is the first mind, God created it in such a way that it created itself, that it brought its own self into being, and from that then brought the rest of creation into being. See? And this is why when the scientists start to investigate genetics and the physics and the galaxies and the solar systems, we have another book called the Self-Creating Universe. That, in other words, these systems are self-organizing. They don't understand this. So, therefore, they don't think there's a God when they look at this. Because they look at the organism and they go, this thing's growing and reproducing on its own. It's self-organizing. Uh-huh. And then they look at the universe in general and they go, this system's a self-organizing system. See? There's no creator behind the scenes pulling the string and making the marionette move. The marionette's alive, you know, and it grows and reproduces and it's self-organizing. It's completely independent of a creator concept. Uh-huh. So therefore, when they go back to the ancient philosophy, they're like, the whole idea that there's a cause that started all of this, see, how that can't be God, because the thing's self-organizing. But this is what the Bab says, and not like any of these modern scientists in the West read the Bab. I mean, I went to the Bioacademic Resource Center to read an article, and I've gone there over the last 10 years, and I happened to look at how many times, I must have been there like, I don't know, 50 times, you know, to read that article. Mm-hmm. And then I happened to notice the total number of hits was 3,000. Yeah, and that's in the last 10 years. So nobody's reading this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just discounted as impenetrable esotericism. Even if it's written by the... Now, one of the guys, Dr. Lambden, that actually translates these writings of Baha'u'llah directly, Juan Cole, in my trying to talk to him about it, called it impenetrable esotericism. He called it virtually incomprehensible. And he's actually reading Baha'u'llah himself. So these guys that have possession of Baha'u'llah's tablets, they don't understand them. Doc said you can't translate word for word, you can only translate concepts. So when they read them, they don't have any concept of what they're reading. So imagine trying to translate something into English that you don't have any concept of what it's saying. Like even if you knew English and you had to translate something from English into Spanish, and when you read the English, it didn't make any sense to you. Okay. How would you translate that into Spanish? Right. Most you could do is translate each word. Like if it was like egg, foot, shoe, you know, it's like, what is this? 1, 5, 3, you know, walk up the down staircase. If it was made, trying to translate James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake or something, you know, that book makes no sense in English.
I know, it's true.
If you ever want to look at a weird book.
It would be fibble-bee.
Okay. So, I don't know if it's because of my background, whatever it is that... when we had brought, Doc had sent out a call that we should find the genealogy of Baha'u'llah, and finally we found he was from these exilarchs, and that we found that Ali had given the daughter of the last Zoroastrian king, Yazdegerd III, had two daughters, one named Shar-Banu and one named Dara, and that he had arranged the marriage between Bastanai and Dara, the Davidic king, and he gave Shar-Banu to Imam Hussein, and descended from those two came the Bab of Baha'u'llah. And we went to the marriage supper gathering in 1988, the 50-year anniversary of the 1938 wedding of Doc and Opal. And we presented this. And after we presented it, Trevor, who's a triple degree doctor in biology, microbiology, and immunology, and he got up there, and he drew Abraham, and then he drew his three wives, and then he drew out how the Zoroaster was in the seed of the, seed of the woman and the women. And then he drew out, you know, this chart, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he put Zoroaster in the middle or not. He might have had him over at the side or something. But anyway, eventually we put Zoroaster in the middle because I talked to him about it. And he drew it out, and he put all the names of the people there. And you could see Abraham, his three wives, and then King David and Muhammad, and then Bastanai and Zoroaster and Muhammad, and then the two women, and then the Bab and Baha'u'llah. And I looked up at the board, and I was like, where have I seen this before? It was just this weird-looking diagram, you know? And I was just like, this looks, oh, it's that thing, you know, with the circles on it, that the were in the, some of those Jewish books. And it was this, you know, which is the Kabbalah Tree of Life. Yeah. Is that 10? There, 10. Okay, it was that. And I was like, oh, I should look into that. You know, I'll do that when I get back to Madison, you know. So I put that on the back burner. Then later, when you look at it, you can see that if you go to the Bab Mahala, they look like legs. Mm-hmm. You know? So the three things look like the torso, and then it become legs. And if you go back to Adam to Abraham, that's like the head. And then the arms would like be sticking out of that. So this pattern looks like a person, too, with a head, a body, and then the legs would come down from here, you know. And this is what they call Adam Kadmon. So that's how I kind of got into the Jewish mysticism, I guess, or Western esoteric tradition, which is Christian and Jewish, studying the Kabbalah. And there's a whole group of people that are associated with this. Like, you associate Einstein and Newton with physics. There's a Moses the Leon, Abraham's writing the Sefer Yetzirah. And then Simon did Bar Yochai. They've got like this whole history of people. And then the Christians got a hold of it. And then you've got Athanasius Kirchner, who helped pay for John Greaves to go to the pyramid and measure it. And then you've got John Dee and the Elizabethan court of Queen Elizabeth, and other people like this, you know. So this got a whole history of tradition throughout the Enlightenment and the Renaissance. As a matter of fact, when the Enlightenment and the Renaissance happened after the Dark Ages, the people were actually studying this in Islam and trying to understand the Hermetic secrets. The tablets of Hermes Trismegistus, Newton was into alchemy. This is the Western mystery tradition type stuff. And, well, this was also prevalent in Islam. And so a lot of Baha'u'llah's tablets that he wrote address some of these issues. Like he mentions gold and lead being transformed in the Kitabi, Book of Certitude, you know, also. Okay. Well, the revelation of so what I'm giving here, I don't want to put a rubber stamp on this, but using this system, I'm able to understand at this point today, from what's happened in the last couple of weeks, the entire body of Baha'u'llah's writing, and that's what I want to share with everybody. That was kind of like the introduction to it. Mm-hmm. So in the book of the temple, so the human being's body is a temple. So this, looking at this as a body, we see that there's nine spheres, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's nine internal systems in the human being. Mm-hmm. The head, the heart, and the reproductive system is in the middle. And then we have, you know, the digestive and the other systems would fall to the left and the right. So this is patterned off of the human form. They also say that these 10 things here are related to the number 4. Because Abdu'l-Bahá says one with the 4 H's on the ringstone symbol. 1 + 2 + 3 + 4 = 10. So the idea that there's 10 of these things appearing, 9 systems, that then appear in the outer unified human form, would be the 10th thing itself, see, is derived from the number 4. Hmm. See? Because 1 + 2 + 3 + 4 = 10. So these 10 things are four things, and those four things are the four letters of the Most Great Name. And Moses, this is the revelation of Moses on Sinai. This is what Baha'u'llah refers to all the time. He says, this is the revelation of Moses on Sinai. And he refers to himself as the speaker on Sinai. Well, what happened on Mount Sinai is he went up there, and he says, well, who are you? He says, I am what I am. Tell them I am who I am sent you. And he says, well, what do you want to give me? He goes, well, here's 10 commandments. See? So those are the two things on Mount Sinai, are the four letters of the name of God and the 10 commandments. And this is the foundation of Judaism. So these 10 spheres, and I've never seen a Jewish book explain this in the whole history of me reading this, but I haven't read everything on it, that nobody's ever related these 10 things to the 10 commandments. And I don't know why. And then they say they're in four worlds. So this is the upper world, and then there's, if you turn it over, it works better. These are the four worlds. See? So you have each one of these middle ones represent the four worlds, the world of emanation, the world of formation, the world of creation, and the physical world that we live in. So right now we have four bodies, they tell us. We have our physical body that's in the physical world. Then we have our emotional body, which exists in an emotional world. Then we have our mental body, which is our intellect, that exists in another world. And then up here is our actual essence of who we are. And the essence of us always has to inhabit a body. And when we die, we go from body to body to body and world to world to world. But we're unaware of our spiritual reality, you know, in the higher worlds. And they use this to explain our body. Well, Freud was exposed to this. So he said, well, we have physical needs. That's the id. He says, well, we have, a divine responsibility to be moral. So he said, that's the superego. And then he said, and in between that is a conflict that's resolved. This is the ego. So he came out with this tripartite structure of the depth psychology based on this stuff that also. So there's a lot of this influencing our culture, but we're not aware of the origins, of a lot of this. All right, so the first commandment, so if we look at it like this, we can also see that if this is Adam, and then what? Moses, help me, Krishna, Master Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, the Bab, Baha'u'llah, and the land. That this would be 4,000 BC, and this would be today, 2001 AD. So we can see that if we look, take it into account this way, it forms the 6,000-year cycle. Well, we know that Adam's 6,000-year cycle is broken up into three 2,000-year periods, which are three trimesters. Mm-hmm. You know, but because of the Melchizedek priesthood, Adam was Zidek, there's a missing thing here, that would be Shem, Abraham, and then Jesus, and then the return of Jesus. So if this, we look at this as a trimester, then we can see that this is an embryonic cycle.
And when gestation?
The baby, yeah, it's three gestation over three trimesters. Well, when the baby's in the womb, it's upside down. See? And then when it comes out, this is the physical world, the 10th one. When it comes out, it then stands on its feet. So if we really wanted to look at this chart, we'd have to flip this whole thing over, but leave the ground where it is. See? And this is actually written in some of the ancient texts. That in order to, you could understand this in this way, you have to be able to do this. This is horrible. How do you get this stuff off of here?
Good.
It worked with Windex.
Just use a grease pen.
Yeah, I thought I'd try this board instead. This is grease crayons.
Oh. Yeah, can you use a grease pen on that?
Probably. But anyway. So if we leave the land down there, and then we flip it over, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... Wait, four.
Two more.
Okay, what it really does is it just moves this one here that was here up to here. So instead of being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, it moves 6 up to this position. 1, 2, 3, 4. See? So now we have the head, the heart, and the reproductive system like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is the upper world, the middle world, and the next world, and let's see. Yeah. So this is our spiritual body in the shape of a five-pointed star, and then this is our this represents more of our will and our soul in this way. So these are the four worlds, and each one of these worlds is related to one of the letters in the name of God. We'll use Moses' letters, YHVH. See? So this is how the four relates to the ten. So when we look at it, the first commandment is, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." So this represents the first commandment of the one true invisible essence. And then it says you won't make any pagan images or bow down before him. That's Jesus coming. And then the next two commandments are to have the name of God and then respect the Sabbath day. And those represent these two, the Bab and Baha'u'llah, or the Bab and Muhammad. The Bab revealed the calendar, which is like the Sabbaths, and then Muhammad. Then you have these five come together as a group. This is Adam, Moses, Zoroaster, Krishna, and Buddha. And these are the laws previous to the coming of Jesus. And then we have the tenth thing. So thou shalt respect your parents, is Adam, and would correspond with Adam. And then not killing, stealing.
Covet thy neighbor's goods.
That's the last one.
Yeah.
Covet thy neighbor's goods is material. That's the material world. That's the tenth one. So these correspond. So they not only correspond to the nine manifestations of the Adamic cycle and the land, they correspond to the way the Ten Commandments are prioritized. So this is the revelation on Sinai, and this corresponds with the nine systems in our body. Our brain and central nervous system is the father, the heart, which is really the mind, this is just a pump, is like the sun, and then the reproductive or generative system is like the Holy Spirit. We receive a feeling through the body. There's a universal sensation, whereas seeing is just localized. Okay. So in the Book of the Temple, Baha'u'llah says, in this dispensation or whatever, he says, we have revealed our revelation in nine modes or grades or stages. We could have revealed them in an infinite variety of stages, but we have deliberately revealed these in nine stages. So he's telling us that you can categorize all of his writings into these nine groups. But nobody before had ever thought, how do these nine groups correspond with the nine manifestations of the Adamic cycle, the first nine of the Ten Commandments, and the nine systems in the human body. So what's weird about this is that once you see how this correspondence works with the tablets of Baha'u'llah, you can internalize it. For instance, I can remember things because I have 10 fingers. Like I can remember five things because I'd be like, I can count my fingers, you know. But you can remember the entire body of Baha'u'llah's revelation based on your own body. Well, this is my head, this is my heart, these are my other systems. So it's a real easy way to remember the entire thing. And what's also weird about it is in the revelation it says, I've engraved upon thee my image. The ancient eternity of my essence, I knew my love for thee and have engraved upon me my image. So it's not just a pneumatical device for remembering this stuff. It like has a profound effect on the individual in their perception of what's going on in their life, you know. So Abdu'l-Bahá said every step should be taken firm in the covenant, you know. So it's not something you just throw yourself into, but it's something to like meditate on, you know. Okay, so the first sphere, going back to the original Kabbalah tree instead of the one I turned over, they call it Keter, which means crown. And they say this represents the infinite will of God. Wow. So that had to be... So out of all of Baha'u'llah's writings, it occurred to me that there should be nine of his tablets that are archetypical of each of the nine categories. See? And then after that, there's other tablets that relate to that subject or theme would be put together and bound into a book. And then that would become a larger volume in each category. And then there might be more than one volume in each category. Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3. But then you go to the next category, you know. So the first one's the Book of the Covenant. The Kitab Yad obviously fits into the first world. It exists all by itself. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. The whole covenant is set up in such a way that we will have no other god before us except the one true invisible God. And the institutions of succession in the covenant, which are also part of that, are set up in such a way that they will never come between us and God. They're not a substitute for God. The administration is not a substitute for the faith of Baha'u'llah. The revelation of Baha'u'llah is never to be organized in any way. So all of those type of principles are contained in this. And the Persians called the Kitab Yad and the Will and Testament bound together, they call it the Ado Magi. See? Yeah. And that means the covenant and the gathering, or the meeting. In other words, because of the covenant, we're meeting here tonight, and the people are online. And because of the covenant and the will and testament, all the world will be assembled in the presence of God in this world and in the next. It's the gathering of souls. So the full title would be, so this book, when it's compiled, is called the Kitab Yad Omagi. And the first part of it is the Kitab Yad, and the next part of it's the Will and Testament, and then the Sur of the Branches in it, and the tablet to Ardi Ba, when Abdu'l-Bahá traveled to the land of Beirut, is there. And then there's the Confession of Bajullah, and then there's the Master's Last Tablet to America, and then there's the tablets to Khalil that Baha'u'llah wrote, and then he wrote two other tablets for Abdu'l-Bahá, and then there's all of this other literature. And all of that, bound together into one volume, becomes this Book of the Covenant. And that's volume one of this. Mm. See? And we're going to put that together and have a book that has all that ordered in it. And it's going to be amazing. We live to do it. Okay, so then we move to the next thing, and this is called Hikmat, or Kokhmah. See? Well, Baha'u'llah revealed a tablet called Hikmat, which is the Hebrew word Kokhmah. It's the second of the ten spheres. Well, this is the tablet that typifies the next grade of his revelation. We have the covenant, but now we have Hikmat, which is wisdom, but it also means science or philosophy or reality. Baha'u'llah says that one of the two signs for the maturing of the world is the adoption of a universal language and a universal alphabet, and the other one is the promulgation of a universal philosophy of science, or the Hikmat, in which all the world will understand this, and when they understand this, that's when we will be on the cusp of all of them accepting this revelation. Mm. And it's different from religion. What it is, it's the science of reality, or the divine science of metaphysics, in which we can understand our place in the universe, with the Creator being completely separate from the creation, and like in the three levels. We are in the world of creation, and then God is the world of essence, and then the world of command is the coming of these manifestations. And that when we recognize the manifestations, we come into a will alignment with God. And the first book in that collection is the Kitab, is the Law-i Hikmat, the tablet of wisdom. And then he has the tablet of reality. There's the pantheism chapter and some answered questions. There's several tablets of Abdu'l-Bahá. We were talking about this about three or four forums ago. All of that's going to be combined and codified into one volume, and it's going to be amazing. When you read this book, and you read it over and over again, because it's exciting, it's uplifting. Mm-hmm. It clears things up in this way. Okay, so then that's called wisdom. The next sephirot that the in the Kabbalah is called Bina, which means understanding, and it's considered to be one of the two female sephirot. Although all of them are male and female in relation to each other. The one above is male in relation to the next one that's female in this type of a way. So in other words, there's this male and female relationship between this. Anyway. And so this is the Bina, or understanding. So wisdom and understanding shall be upon them. See? There are several verses in the Bible where they get these names for these from. And I was going to compile that too so people could read it. I'm kind of tired of being trapped in like my own space, and I want to be able to like publish this stuff so people know what I'm talking about more. We can have more of a conversation, not just for us, but for everybody. So anyway, wisdom and understanding, or Bina. Well, understanding is mysticism. Okay, in other words, the greatest mystical work of Baha'u'llah is the Seven Valleys, and that's the next book. So the first one is the Kitab Yad. Next is the Tablet of Wisdom, or Hikmat, and then we have the Seven Valleys. So this is going to form a volume, which is the Seven Valleys and the Four Valleys. It also includes, he's got several other mystical works. He's got a bunch of poems and odes that he wrote, like the Ode to the Dove, and the Tablet of Rashiyama, the Cloud of Unknowing, in which he talks about this cloud through which God is made known. And this is the cloud that appeared between the two cherubim and the ark. Mm-hmm. And it's about the mystical connection. What?
Mount Sinai.
Yeah, the cloud on Mount Sinai. And this is his first poem that he wrote after he came out of the dungeons. His very first writing, called the Rashiyama, and it's in a lyrical verse style. So all of his writings that are lyrical and verse styles will be compiled into a book. Like, we can pick up a book of Rumi and read his poems, but where's the book, the full volume of Baha'u'llah's odes? Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Kevin would like you to repeat the meaning of Kitab Yad Omagi.
Yad Omagi means the covenant and the gathering. Ad is covenant, and O is and, and Magi means the meeting, the assembly, or the gathering in this world and the next. The Ad Omagi. And the Persians call the Kitab Yad the Ad, and they call the Will and Testament of Abdu'l-Bahá Magi. So would they, instead of saying the Book of Baha'u'llah's Covenant, the Sacred Will Testament of Abdul Baha, they say the Automagi. That takes a lot less words. And I didn't know that, except we were coming out here, and there's a big long story about that. But we met this Persian guy in Utah that told me that.
So
that was a little gift.
So they can see that?
Yeah.
Can you say that one more time?
Breadcrumb and the trail back to the gingerbread house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, blame it on me.
I was asking her a question.
Katavi Adumagi. Can you say it one more time?
Odd means covenant. O is and. And Magi refers to the will and testament of Abdul Baha, and it means meeting, gathering, or assembly in this life for the next. We're assembled here now. We're going to be assembled in the next world for eternity. It's the gathering of souls. Yeah. Okay, so then the next one's called Bina, which is understanding. So this is what we understand is that there's no direct access between the soul and the Creator. And the Bab, what we understand from the Tablet of Hikmat, the one we just read about, mm-hmm. the Bab says the Creator, there can be no connection between the Creator and the creation at all, mm-hmm. to such an extent that he created something else to create it for him. He delegated it. Mm-hmm. He's still the Creator, mm-hmm. but he created what we call a fashioner. He created the fashioner to fashion it for him. He himself didn't touch it at all. He had this other entity called the fashioner create everything for him. Okay? And that, well, then they said, well, he created the fashioner. No, the Bab says he created the fashioner in such a way that the fashioner self-created itself. And that's why everything in the universe is self-organizing. Okay, so we understand this. But,
really?
Yeah, we understand that we can't know and love God except through the appearance of the manifestation of his qualities and attributes. Mm-hmm. And we know that when we come into will alignment with this, all of a sudden we then experience a union with God. And it's not a union not with God, it's an actual union with God, mm-hmm. the one true invisible essence. Well, how can that happen if there's no connection? Therefore, we have wisdom and understanding. This is the mystical experience we have. If we don't have this mystical experience, we'll break all of the laws. Because when Adam gave these laws, the people were oppressed by these because they weren't in this condition. Mm-hmm. See? But if you're already, elevated, you're not going to do anything to pull yourself out of that. But if you're downtrodden, you'll do anything to get away from it. Mm-hmm. And so the way that people experience this revelation is like from the bottom up. But the way the revelation's given is from the top down. And so last night after the feast, Joe was here. Did you meet Joe? Their neighbor?
Yeah, Bill.
No, Joe. Yeah. You kept calling him Bill.
Oh, his name's Joe.
Yeah.
Why did he correct me?
Well, because he's Joe.
Hey, Bill. Well, good to see you, Bill. Thanks, guys. Good to meet you.
So we said to Bill,
his wife's name?
Kim.
Joe and Kim.
Okay. I said, if you could sit God down in a chair in your room, would you want to do that? And if so, what would you want to say to him? And she kind of got all bashful. But that lit him up like a Christmas tree. He was like, zing! And then he comes walking in there. And he had like a lit... what did he say? He said, I'd want to sit God down. What did he say he wanted to ask God?
He said, if I could sit God down, I would ask him, okay, now there's these things I've done in the past that were bad that I wish I wouldn't have done. Now what can I do now to make it right?
Yeah, or something like that.
Something like that.
So then he turned the tables on me, and then he said, because I broached the subject, then he looked at me and he says, would you, if you had it to do all over again, would you do it exactly the way it happened, or would you avoid all of those mistakes that you made? See? Or he asked the question better, but he directly asked me. So I said to him, well, you picked a unusual day to ask me that because I've been thinking about it. And I said, so here's my answer today, I told him. I said, I wouldn't change one thing that I did or decided. I goes, because of everything I lived through, I am who I am now. And what I mean by that is I see things the way I see them because I lived through all of that and all the decisions I made up to this point. So the answer to your question, Joe, is I wouldn't change one iota of what happened to get here. And I wouldn't want to do it all over again. Now, from this point forward, I pray every day to repeat all of that stuff I did. Because I'm smarter. I mean, yeah, if I was who I am now and I had to do it all over again, I would do it completely different. See? Because I wouldn't repeat all those mistakes. But I am who I am now because of all of that. Mm-hmm. And so I do have a chance to do it all over again from this point forward. Mm-hmm. And that is what I'm doing. Mm. That's why we keep having another day and another day and one day at a time, you know. So he was like, true answer! He was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then he had a bunch more questions. I can't remember them all. Okay. So anyway, so that we have to have wisdom and understanding. And so let's move forward. So then we move into the next thing. Okay, this is where it gets interesting. The next sphere in the Kabbalah is called Chesed, which means loving kindness. And then the next sphere on the opposite of that one is called Gevurah, which means strength or and so forth in Hebrew. Okay, and what they say is that these are kind of like polar opposites to each other. That what the Kabbalists say is that the other way you can look at this tree is you can look at it as three pillars, where the middle pillar is the middle way, and that you don't want to go to the left, and you don't want to go to the right. And Baha'u'llah writes about this too. You want to have moderation, which is in the middle. And what they call these three pillars is they call the pillar on the right, they call that the pillar of severity. And on the left, they call it the pillar of mercy. And in the middle, they call it the pillar of mildness. And in Hebrew, the reason they call it that is they call the pillar on the right Gevurah. And they call the pillar on the left Chesed. And the pillar in the middle is Keter, the crown. Well, the thing about it is that Chesed and Gevurah are the middle two. Why would they name this pillar Gevurah and this pillar Chesed when the top of this pillar is Bina and the top of this pillar is Hikmah, wisdom? Well, I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, when you look at it the other way, as Adam Kadmon, the perfect man or the perfect form, our intellect and or will is still here. This is Keter. But when you say the heart, the Son of God was in the bosom of the Father. This is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. The heart is the mind. And the mind, it contains wisdom. So this really should be the heart. And the mystical experience, which relates to Adam, should fall with the foundation, you know, in the generative parts. See? So the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit should be the covenant, the wisdom, and the mysticism. This way. See? Well, if you do that, you remove these two from here and replace them with here. You remove one and two and three and replace them with six and nine. And two times three is six, and three times three is nine. So they're resonant with each other by a multiple of three. Two and three become six and nine when you multiply two them both by three. So if you move these two out of this position and put them there, it bumps Gevurah and Chesed up as the chief of these two other pillars. And then you displace six and nine to the bottom of these other two pillars. And that's why these other two pillars are called severity and mildness, because these two become the tops of them when you rearrange it as three pillars. Okay, so Chesed, which means loving kindness, this is typified by Baha'u'llah's book that Shoghi Effendi compiled, Prayers and Meditations. So, for instance, when we have wisdom and understanding, and we have this mystical experience, we understand this, then we come into the presence of God, and then we want to converse with God. And how do we do that? Well, through prayer and meditation. We pray, we speak to God, we meditate and think, we receive answers from God. We're now in a communication situation with the Creator. So this Prayers and Meditation represents the next publication that we have in English already of the next sphere. Well, then we move to the next one, and this is severity. See? And this is represented by the Epistle to the Son of the Wolf, which is his rebuke to these ones that rejected. See, once you have wisdom and union with God, wisdom and understanding, then the sheep and the goats are separated into those who will commune with God with prayer and meditation, and the wolf. You have the sheep and the wolf, the sheep and the goats. You have the wolves on this side, see. Mm-hmm. The Epistle to the Son of the Wolf represents this. The Law of Burhan, the Tablet of the Death of Food Pasha, maybe the Kitabi Body, which he rebukes the Bobbies, might be in this category. I haven't read it, so I don't know. But these are further volumes in this series. But one of the volumes is the Epistle of the Son of the Wolf Sea. Okay, so then we move next down the ladder, and we come into two more divisions of Baha'u'llah's writings, and these are his social and ethical teachings. So here we have his social teachings, which are for world order, the education of men, the setting up of schools and government, the universal language. We need these things to live in a society. That's the next sphere, and that's represented by the book The Gleanings of the Writings of Baha'u'llah in English, and specifically the Tablets of the Suri Maluk, his Tablet to the Kings, the Tablet of Dunya, the Law, a Tablet of the World, and the Tablet of Maqsood. The Tablet of Maqsood is the one where he says, man is the greatest talisman, but lack of an education has deprived him of tapping into his secret powers, you know. So we've all heard that before, but that's here. So that's the Maqsood. And then the next one is the Cleanup Act, or the purification of individual behaviors, and this is exemplified by the hidden words. And then after that, Bisharat, Ishrakat, Daliat, Abdu'l-Bahá lists off everything in this book. That's volume one of this. Now we did words. And then we come here to the final one, the ninth one, and this is the Sur of the Haikal, or the temple. Mm-hmm. Okay? And this represents the expression of the covenant in the form of the four living creatures that will accept the Universal House of Justice. And I've already compiled this book together, and we're going to probably have it published before January 1st. Of this coming year. I've already showed Colin the outline of the whole book. I've just got to polish up the translation on it in English, and I want to talk more about that in a minute. And then that's the nine books. And the tenth one is the Octus itself. Hmm. When you look at the Kitabi Octus and compile it together correctly, it forms 10 chapters, which corresponds to the Ten Commandments. It's in four books, four parts, with three categories, five and one, just like this. And the Octus itself encapsulates this entire system. So now that we have all of his tablets, 20,000 tablets, books, and epistles fit into these nine categories, the tenth thing, the Octus itself, when we compile it correctly in the right order, mm-hmm. we've already published the one on feasts and fasts, mm-hmm. you know, when we annotate it, you know, we add the annotation to it,
right.
it will link back to these other books
right.
and say, this, and it'll show.
This is part.
Yeah, it'll show how all of these other things flow through the Octus being the nexus point from which mm-hmm. all of the other writings emanate. Mm-hmm. And it'll be an amazing, clear view of the entire Sea of the Revelation.
Hmm.
And the Sur of the Temple is like the ark that we use to sail on the Sea of Baha, the House of Justice, in the form of the human temple. Or we're in the form of the human temple now, even our own journey through. You know, reality, you know.
What did you say the ninth one was?
I'm going to talk about it more. It's the Sur of the Temple.
And the eighth one?
Hidden words. Okay, so let's recap. So tell them where you're going to tell them where you're going. So let's go from the bottom up. So we have the Octus. Then we have the Sur of the Temple, called Haikal. We have the Hidden Words. Then the Sur of Maluk, which is represented by the Gleanings of the Writings of Baha'u'llah in English. This is why Shoghi Effendi translated these books in English. The English translations he authorized fit into these categories right now.
Mm.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Thank God. Okay, then we have Gleanings. Then we have the Epistle to the Son of the Wolf. And then we have Prayers and Meditations of Baha'u'llah. And then we have Seven Valleys and Four Valleys. And then we have the Law-i Hikmat and these other writings, which we don't have compiled together. I have to make a book on that one. And then we have the Kitabiyad. So the one I'm working on now is the Sur of the Temple, and the next one I'm going to work on is Hikmat, because these are the two missing. Volume 1's missing is an English compilation. Like, you could compile the stuff on the Covenant English together yourself. If you went through and did a search on the... I'm going to put that one together too. But we have Gleanings, we have Hidden Words, we have the Seven and Four Valleys, we have the Epistle to the Son of the Wolf, we have Prayers and Meditations as a volume. Volume 1 of all of this. But we don't have the Hikmat writings compiled. We just have the Tablet of Hikmat, that's it. And we don't have the Sur of the Temple compiled. Those are the two I'm working on right now. And then when those two are done, I'm going to do the Covenant next. And then Yusuf's going to help because he's learning Persian.
Mm,
so it's really hard to fit the other ones into the categories without reading them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because there's a lot of overlap. like one of them will get into a mystical subject, then talk about like a wisdom type subject, but then it'll talk about, it might be a prayer in there from Prayers and Meditations, but if the point of that tablet is, the essence of that tablet is like a social teaching for like education, then it should go into that category, even though it ties into the other ones. So we really don't know where the other ones will fit until we actually read them, you know. But and we don't have them, we can't read them, we have people's descriptions of what's in them. So we have a notion of where they go. There's about 200 of his, and we're only doing his most famous tablets. So he's got like a lot of other ones too. Anyway, this is the first tier of the system. These all represent volume ones of the nine categories. Then there'll be volume two of the nine categories, volume three. And that, anyway, that's the encyclopedic overview of this. It's pretty good though, isn't it? Is this a great gift for Nauruz of 2010?
Yeah, I have the whole thing compiled and categorized.
And I'm going to write all this up, so if you read through it, you can just... We're already familiar with his scattered pieces. You can already put it together in your head, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if you could just compile it, like, use an ocean.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so I want to briefly talk about the next thing. So this is the Sur of the Temple. Okay, so in order to really make this look great, we're going to have... you ever see those editions of Prayers and Meditations and Gleanings where they're hardback and they're all nice?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to republish those with different introductions, just the way they are, and explain the system in the introduction, and they'll be cataloged about where they fit into this. So we came up with names for these things in Persian. So like the Akdas, we call it the Kitab-i Akdas. So these are the Persian names for these nine things. Okay. So for the Book of the Covenant, that would probably be the Kitab-i Yad Umagi, or the Kitab-i Yad, we'll call it. And then the Hikmat is Kitab-i Hikmat al-Haq. And then this means mysteries, pre-existent mysteries. Kitab-i Asrar al-Qadim. And so that starts with the seven valleys and the four valleys. And then we'll have the, I like this one, the Kitab-i Azkar. Like the Mashriq al-Azkar. Azkar means dhikr, remembrance, communion. That's Prayers and Meditations, is volume one of the Kitab-i Azkar. And then we have the tablet, the test, Fitna. Which we've talked about a lot, but we don't have the actual tablet translated. But this is where he says the covenant breakers are in the world to test. They bring this testing about. This includes the Epistle of the Son of the Wolf. Mm-hmm. So that's the Kitab-i Fitna. And then we have the Kitab-i Yagan. That category of the Book of Certitude will be in there. Mm-hmm. And then the letters where he's giving commands to the kings and rulers and to set up civilization. Maybe we'll call it the Kitab-i Amr, you know, Amrullah, or, you know, or the Book of the Cause of God. Or the Book of Command or something. And then for the hidden words, we have purity, your purification. We're also Zoroaster, if you align them or lines with this one, he brought purity. Mm-hmm. And like Kitab-i Agan is thinking. That's like Buddha meditation. You can align the manifestations with this too. Anyway, that's the Kitab-i Athar, or Athar, which means Book of Purification. And then we have the Kitab-i Hekel, which is the Book of the Temple. And the tenth one's the Kitab-i Akdas. So now we've got 10 books called Kitab. Book of something. The Ad, the Hikmat, the Asrar, Al-Kadim, Azkar, Fitna, Igan, Amr, Athar, Hekel, and Akdas. Yeah. So when we're dead in 100 years, we get a big box like that in the mail with this big pile of colorful covers. Volume 1 through 10, you know. Okay, so... in looking into some of this, we look at the book, the Sur of the Temple. Baha'u'llah himself compiled it. He took the Sur of the Temple, and he had those other epistles in the shape of a five-pointed star. And he says, this fulfills the prophecy in the book of Zechariah for the building of the temple. So when he recompiled it, he had them write that at the very end. So I was like, well, that's interesting. And I was like, well, when they published the book of, they republished the Kitab-i, it's called Summons of the Lord of Hosts. The Headless Hyphens, you know, I don't know what to call them.
Well, Summons of the Lord of Hosts.
Yeah, they published a new book called The Summons of the Lord of Hosts, mm-hmm. and it's got the Sur of the Hekel and those other epistles there. Mm-hmm. And because he wrote to the kings and rulers in there, like the Shah and the King of Russia and the Queen of England, they then attached the Maluk and the other tablets to the kings in that same book. Mm-hmm. to make it a bigger book, you know. So it's got the Sur of the Kings in there, which you can read, which is great that they translated it. The Sur of Reyes, the tablet to Faub Pasha, the other Reyes tablet. Okay. Well, in tablets of Baha'u'llah revealed after the Octus, they translated the tablet of Carmel, the tablet to the Christians, you know, and the tablet of Maqsud, and these fit into different categories. If you're going to go by the nine modes, which he says are in the Haeckel, they're like, you know, it's a nice compilation, but they don't really fit with each other. Like, you read one, and you get to the other one, it's like, well, this is something completely, now for something different, you know? Which is fine, but whatever. So, I was looking at these, and, it's not like trying to put together a puzzle or something. So, at some point, you just have to be like, what's going on here? You know, can you shine a light into this? And I don't know if I'd come across this 10 years ago or not, but it doesn't really matter. But it finally rose to the surface. And there's only a few tablets he directed toward the Christians. For instance, in the Sur of the Temple, he wrote to the Christian kings and rulers. I mean, that's his tablet to the Pope and the leaders of France, England, Russia, and instead of the United States, Iran. So, that's the beast that becomes the four living creatures with the House of Justice at the head of it. The mystery, the reversal of the sign of the sovereign, you know. The beast is thrown into the lake of fire, and it comes out on the other side as the kingdom, with the same four countries. Or the throne chariot, you know, in Ezekiel, where they show the four creatures and so forth. The vehicle, or the temple is a vehicle, you know. So, I mean, prophetically, scientifically, we know what that is, you know. That's a very important tablet. But it's directed toward the dead in Christ rising first. And in the Epistle of Peter, he says we're all stones in the spiritual temple of God, in the living temple. Okay, so that looks like a Christian compilation that he compiled. So then, the tablet to the Christians is more likely to be associated with that, the Law Iactus, the tablet to the Christians.
Yes,
then to serve the kings of the East. Okay, he writes to the head of the Ottoman Empire. So what? That's a different category. And what does he do? He says to him, look, you got to set up schools. We got to educate the people. That's social injustice category. It's a different category. See? So these people don't know what they're doing. So then the next tablet we have is the Law Hirtek, which we've published. This is his tablet to the leader of the Templars. They're the people who in 1844, after the 2,300 evenings and mornings, moved there, and he writes this Christian proclamation to their leader in the tablet of that. And then there's the tablet of Carmel. Where should that go? And that says, call out to Zion, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's the proclamation that he's on the throne of David and that it's established on Mount Carmel. And then I was looking for more tablets to the Christians and I couldn't find any. And it turns out there's four. There's the most holy tablet to the Christians. Yeah, then there's the tablet to Carmel. Then there's this tablet to Hirtek. And then there's the gargantuan, mind-numbing, Sur of the Temple, you know. There's four of them. And I was like, well, wait a minute. And so then, how the Sur of the most Christian starts out? He says, pray, this is the temple sent down, this is the tablet sent down to the people in the name of God, the All-Glorious. And then he says, woe to those who have been, he says, praise be to God that this has come forth from the ocean, from the sea of names. See? And then he says, O ye followers of Jesus, the Spirit, is what he says. O ye followers of the Spirit, Jesus. Have you rejected me by reason of my name?
Yeah, right.
Hey, so he mentions his name, right? Mm-hmm. Well, then in the Tablet of Carmel, he's announcing his place.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, he's on Mount Carmel.
Right.
Well, in the Tablet to the Templars, they're the ones who showed up there on the date.
Uh-huh.
His missions to build the temple. Uh-huh. And I was just like, gong. I'm like, wait a minute. These four tablets are him proclaiming his prophesied name, his prophesied date, his prophesied address, and his prophesied mission. We are highly criticized for not being true Baha'is because we go by the teachings of Dr. Leland Jensen, which he said when he I went through the Pharisees, they had nothing to do with the Baha'i faith. They were the proofs and evidences for it. Mm-hmm. And he gave, and the main thing he gives is a calling card of how to recognize him. And he says Baha'u'llah gave this. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the past they were like, show me where Baha'u'llah writes that he fulfills prophecy by his name, date, and his permission. So they're like culling through all of these books of Baha'u'llah, like the Book of Certitude and stuff. And you can see where he says he's prophesied this way and that way and so forth. And they can't see where he's prophesied by name, date, address, permission. Mm. Because they're looking at the verses and letters in all of these sea of writings. Whereas if they step back up on the land and look down into the ocean, they'd say, wait a minute. Here's the tablet where he's talking about his name. Here's the tablet where he's talking about his address. Here's his place. And here's his mission. So our Book of the Temple looks completely different than theirs. It has an introductory quote called an epigraph by the Bab, where he says, O ye people of the West, come forward. Mm-hmm. Eh? Then it's got the introduction to the kings and rulers of America and the republics thereof, and the proclamation to the Western people to accept the revelation. Then it's got the tablet to the Christians with an article that Baha'u'llah circulated to the first Christian that accepted him. It's got his proclamation of declaration of faith in there. And then it's got the tablet of Carmel, the tablet of the 2300 days of Lai Hertek, and then it's got the Surah of the Temple after it. And that's the book. That's part one of the book. Part two is Abdu'l-Bahá's Tablets of the Divine Plan. Let's go out and build this thing. Mm. And then it's got Shoghi Effendi's Tablets of America and the Most Great Peace and, America's Spiritual Destiny. And that's the Book of the Temple. It's amazing. Anybody who reads it with the introduction on it, explaining the criteria for recognizing him, if they're a Christian and pick this book up, would be like, by God, this person imprisoned in Akka is the second coming of Christ. The book itself would convert everybody. That's how powerful a book it is. And when you read Baha'u'llah's tablets, those four tablets, it's really nine tablets, because there's five to the world leaders, and five and four is nine. So it's the four turned into nine, which is 10. If you include Abdu'l-Bahá's action of the divine plan, it's the book itself is in the same pattern of 4, 9, and 10. See? So when you see this pattern in there too, and in the human form, being the temple of us, with the nine systems, and he declares his nine modes of writing there, the thing's just overwhelmingly amazing. That's how this book's going to be published, and hopefully it'll be published in January, this year. But the problem we're having is we have to have a unique translation. We can't translate, we can't take Taherzadeh's translations of the tablets, because we don't own the copyright. On that, we have to have our own translations. So Anton Haddad translated a lot of this stuff, and Ahmad Sarab. So we're going back to before the violation and pulling out the old translations and then cleaning them up where there were mistakes in them based on what it actually says in some of the newer translations. We'll have a unique book, and we got to be able to publish this book. We can't just circulate it around. Out of all the books, that one needs to be published. The other ones, like, it doesn't matter. We can privately circulate prayers and Seven Valleys. But this book itself, we have to have all of the translation correct. And thank God the tablet to Hertak's 100% Arabic. Yusuf's just going to retranslate the whole tablet. The one we have is really bad. And then from then we'll polish it up so it reads lyrically like his other stuff, Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to do. And so this book, his four tablets are his name, date, address, and mission. And in the tablet of Hertek, he says to him, you should ponder what has been revealed in the transcribed tablet. That's him referring to some answered questions where Abdu'l-Bahá explains the 2300 years. So that, yeah, he's saying it's in another tablet. So that's been inserted into the tablet of Hertek. So when you read the first intro, then you read Abdu'l-Bahá's date prophecy explanation, then you go back to Baha'u'llah. And it reads really smooth, and it's really amazing. Yeah. It's very transformative. Mm-hmm. So
that's amazing.
So the four letters of his name, Baha or BH, A and Hamza, they came in two pairs, where B and H are paired, and A and Hamza are paired, which is the twin manifestations, the Bab of Baha'u'llah, and then Joshua and Zerubbabel that comes last. And this is the base pairs of DNA are paired. So there's not only four bases, but they're paired. Wow. Mm. And so these four tablets correspond to that. Last thing, Abdu'l-Bahá said that Baha, the four letters in Baha correspond to the four levels of understanding reality, where the first letter of the name represents the essence of the thing, or its identity. The second letter represents the qualities and attributes of the thing. The next letter represents what we call the thing, the name that exists, or the name that exists spiritually. And then the fourth letter represents the thing in action, like actually performing its function. Mm-hmm. So like the cup has an essence, it has qualities and attributes. We call it a cup, and then it forms the function of being a cup. So this is one way to look at stuff, is on these four letters that correspond to the letters of the name. So in his tablet to the Christians, he's actually revealing his identity, which is transcendent beyond mere names. Mm-hmm. And then in the tablet of Carmel, which is the tablet of his address, he's actually showing that the place of revelation is pre-existent beyond time and space, because it appears in quality and attribute without any actual location, mm-hmm. mystically, although he's saying this is Mount Carmel. Mm-hmm. Then when he gives the date in the tablet of Hertek, this is where he breaks down his actual name as BHA and in letters and numbers in that tablet. Mm-hmm. And that corresponds with the third letter, which is the name. And this is Doc's mission when he established this. And then the fourth one is the Sur of the temple itself, which is bringing this thing into action through the teaching effort, which represents the throne of David being the spearhead of the teaching effort and this type of thing, the actual action of that. So that even the four tablets correspond to the four letters of the name and these four worlds and so on and so forth. You know. Mm-hmm. So it's basically, if we look at things this way, they're not comprehensible unless we see the locus of organization, which is the name. So all of this revolves around the revelation of the Most Great Name. All the volumes, all the books, all the teachings can be understood through these four things, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Until the next manifestation comes and explains that we were all wrong. Did you see all this? That's come between you and God. It's all for the mind.
Yeah.
But this is kindergarten test of the Baha'i cycle. This is our education, mm-hmm. for the oneness of humanity.
Well,
Tui says,
wow.
That's
great. Yeah, well, if they have feedback, I'm done. That's the presentation. It was in three parts.
Does that have anything to say?
I'm going to I'll publish a short write-up on this and send it to the listserv. Oh, you people can refer to it.
So in his chemistry lab?
Probably.
How do you turn this off?
There's a stop button, I think.
Colin Sui says yes, a writer would be great. Kevin says it's good to hear this.